Welcome back to Beyond Classified. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guest is Dr. Bruce Goldberg. He is a dentist and hypnotherapist. He specializes in past life regression and future life progression hypnotherapy and has retired from dentistry to devote full time to his rapidly expanding international hypnotherapy practice. He has been on many radio and television talk shows, as well as a media consultant, a New Age metaphysical activist, and spokesperson. He has written several books and has produced dozens of self-hypnosis tapes. Dr. Goldberg, welcome back. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. It's a pleasure to reincarnate with you, Chris. We've been interviewed before.
Oh, yes, it is a pleasure. Always great to have you back. And it's going to be great to meet you, like I was telling you, in person in Laughlin in a few days at the Mega Conference. Now, last time you were on our show, we barely scratched the surface when it comes to OBEs and past life regression. I want to go a little bit deeper in tonight, as deep as we can go, really. I'd like to start by talking about what our perception of time is and how our reality actually plays out isn't really actually a linear timeline. Is that right?
Yes. Let me, this is called the space-time continuum. So I'll make it very simple and then we can segue that into past life regression or future life progression. Now, according to quantum physics and astrophysics and all the fun academic disciplines, and this came out of the theory of relativity from Einstein back in 1905 and the general theory in 1915. So we live in the space-time continuum, which means that on the Earth plane, which is where we're on now, this is the physical dimension, and I'm going to elaborate on the other dimensions as we go along here. But on the Earth plane, past, present, and future are isolated in little boxes. Okay, I understand that, and I have no problem with that. But when you go beyond the Earth plane into the fifth dimension, and we'll describe that because that's going to be a very important part to discuss, now all time is simultaneous. So let me give you my classic analogy to show you how you can relate to this on the Earth plane. Let's say that you were in a helicopter a couple of hundred feet above a freeway. Okay, and you're looking down on the freeway and you have a cell phone and there are three cars. One car is directly below you with a cell phone that you can connect to. One car is 5 miles behind it and one car is 5 miles ahead of it. Now, each car on the freeway cannot see each other. You can't see 5 miles behind on a freeway. But the helicopter, because it's above the freight, can perceive all three cars at the same time. There's your space-time continuum. So when somebody goes into the fifth dimension, which, by the way, is a good example of when you go to sleep at night and you go into your REM cycle, which is the fifth stage of a five-stage sleep cycle that any neurologist can verify, okay? So when you're in this dream cycle or REM cycle, it's not just dreaming and going into an alpha brainwave. Yes, you're doing all that. But on a more metaphysical level, you're in the fifth dimension. So when you dream, you can now dream about a past life or a future life. In fact, very often the sneak previews of past lives and future lives are dreams. And you can also have precognitive dreams, dreams of the future. Now, there were some researchers back in New York originally in Mamamedy's laboratory in Brooklyn, Krippner and Olner. They did a lot of research in the 50s, 60s, and early 70s about documenting precognitive dreams and how they actually came true. They would predict horse racing results or football or baseball or NBA results. So we have a documentation to this. All right. So it's not just a, wimp in a prayer and some high level of just wishful thinking. It's actually documentable, so to speak, or verifiable. So basically, that's what the space-time continuum is. So when I work with my patients, I'm training them to access into their higher self through hypnosis. Your higher self has access to what we call the Akashic Records. The Akashic Records, technically, is a fifth-dimensional computer chip stored on the causal plane. And I'll go into the dimensions in a few moments, but let's just give you the big picture. So your higher self actually reads the Akashic Records, and that's how you get information about a past, future, or even parallel life. So to define the terms, when you go back into a past life, that's called a past life regression. If you progress forward into a future lifetime, that's called a future life progression. And if you go into a parallel life, which is occurring now, but in a different physical body, your soul is split into different, life forces, that's called a paragression. So these are terms, especially the paragression and progression, that I documented and named way back like 40 years ago. So that's what we're talking about. Now, when it comes to the idea of going into the idea of a past life and progressing into a future life, when people are on what we call the soul plane, which is a different dimension that I will document a little bit later on, you choose your next life. So the soul, which is really the life force, which is electromagnetic radiation, and again, we can document that. Scientific research has documented that. So the soul is actually observes its new life, and within 24 to 48 hours, it makes its sojourn into the body, and therefore is now staying in the body for the most part. Although the soul leaves the body at night, every night into the REM cycle. So the dream levels are when the soul actually leaves the body, occupies a spiritual body, let's say the astral body to go to the astral plane, and leaves a clone of itself like an alias on a computer so that the physical body is not going to be possessed or attacked psychically by some lower astral entity. So that's what the system is. It's a matter of, this is a lot of science involved, but it's real, and that's good. So the nice thing about this is that the universe gives us this paradigm. In other words, this is not something somebody made up in a garage one weekend. This is something the universe has given us, not only to progress as a soul, but to eventually ascend from and to perfect our soul. So there's a real reason for this, and it comes from what we call the God energy complex, which is what your higher self, also known as the superconscious mind, originates from. So when I work with a typical patient, these are people who are typical profile. They have a fear of death, especially as they get older. They have habits and phobias, etc. So the advantage of these techniques is to eliminate the fear of death, to do what I call psychic empowerment, to take charge of your life, and to become immune to the previous habits or phobias or other self-defeating sequences that you might have been previously vulnerable to, and to access your higher self and your Akashic records and perceive your own past, parallel, and future lives. And that is the advantage of this therapy, which anyone can do, by the way. And for the benefits of your viewers and listeners, if they go to my homepage, there's a lot of information about private sessions. I do sessions by computer. 95% of my patients are done by either Skype, FaceTime, or Zoom, so they can actually do sessions with me without having to travel to Los Angeles. So that's one aspect. And of course, all my books and CDs are on my homepage, as well as I also do a monthly webinar, the second Sunday of the month, which I deal with different topics. And each of those webinars include a group hypnosis experience. So it's an experiential webinar. So just for the background of your viewers and listeners here. So basically, this is what we're dealing with here. The purpose of reincarnation, people say, why do we do this? Okay, why don't we just all ascend? Okay, that would be nice. And it's the goal. But it's to understand why we do what we do and to teach us to avoid repeating the same kind of mistakes that we have made throughout our lives and throughout history. Because remember, the average person on this planet today has at least 1,000 past lives. That is not impressive. You want to get out of here as fast as possible. But unfortunately, people make the same mistakes over and over again. So here's an example of one of my cases that I report in my original book, Past Lives, Future Lives, and its subsequent update, Past Lives, Future Lives Revealed. This is a woman who was a female photographer, came to me many years ago, and she was regressed to a past life in Chicago in the early 1900s, in which she was a really nasty mafiosa. Now, in this life, she suffered from anorexia nervosa. She was starving herself to death, okay? And she was not an unintelligent person, very attractive woman, but again, she was really underweight in a very dangerous situation. The past life in the early 1900s in Chicago, she was a mafia guy, overweight, a creepy person, a murderer, a really nasty person. So she hated that image, and she had dreams of this person, and she finally identified as her past life. So she didn't want to be like that person, so that's why she was starving herself to death to try to not be like this fat cat from the 1920s in Chicago. By doing the regression, and not just the regression, but actually doing the super conscious mind tap by connecting her to a higher self, that's the real therapy. She was able to overcome that negative background, and then she was able to gain more weight and become at a decent weight and to go on with her life. And that was a very dynamic case. Now, an even more exotic one occurred, what I call, what is known as hysterical blindness. This is a woman, she's mid to late 20s. She was in her apartment and her boyfriend were there. And she goes into the bathroom to see what he's doing because he's been there for a while. And he was taking some amphetamine pills, which she did not know he was taking. These were illegal drugs, okay? So she said, what's going on? And he says, leave me alone, I'm taking my pills. I need this for energy, blah, blah, blah. So she freaked out, closed her eyes. And when she opened her eyes, she could not see. Now, this is not a medical syndrome. This is a psychosomatic syndrome. This is called hysterical blindness. She went to an ophthalmologist. The ophthalmologist said, your optic nerve is in perfect shape, but she couldn't see because she was not supposed to see her boyfriend taking the pills. When I took her into a past life, she was in England in the late 1880s, and she was a little girl, and she was about 6 years old. Her father was a morphine addict. And one day when she was out to play, he said, get out and just go out and play. Even though she was 6 years old, he was divorced, as you can imagine why. She came back a little early because it was cold out. It was like a late fall, early winter's day. She went to see where her father was. Her father was in the bedroom and he was shooting up amphetamine into his veins. And he said, you shouldn't have seen me. You shouldn't have seen this. And he beat her up and threw her into the closet. And that's why she shouldn't have seen her father taking the amphetamine. And that was the origin of hysterical blindness. Within 15 minutes after we did the regression and the superconscious mind tap, she was able to get her sight back again. So those are examples. Now, of course, the most famous case of mine, which many of your viewers may be familiar with, is The Search for Grace. It was made into a CBS movie. It was a documented case of a woman who was obsessively attracted to a married man that she couldn't break up with him, even though he tried to murder her on three different occasions. And back in 1927, she had in 46 lives that we did, regressions, she was with this guy 20 times and he murdered her in every single life. The most recent was in Buffalo, New York in 1927, when her name was Grace Doe, and he was a mafioso bootlegger in the 1920s from Detroit. Well, as it turned out, she gave me a bunch of facts about almost two dozen facts that were verifiable by the CBS researcher because they did the movie on this. And two of the facts that were not verifiable by the newspaper reports, at that time there were four newspapers in Buffalo, now there's only two, or one, I should say, the Buffalo Evening News. The newspaper said she was 30 years old at the time of her death and that her name of her son was Chester Jr., Chester being the husband. Well, as it turns out, she was 32 years old, which is what her patient told me in trance, not 30. So the newspapers are wrong and they all copied each other, which is what people do today. And that the name of her son may have been Chester Jr. by his birth certificate, but everybody called him Cliff, which is what she called him in trance. And I spoke to the grandchildren when this movie was aired back in 1994. Everybody called him Uncle Cliff or Grandpa Cliff. His Cliff was his name that everybody called. So she was right. Newspapers were wrong. And you can't get into New York City or state records unless you get the governor's permission. So nobody did a paper trail here until 1992 when the research was done and the movie aired in 1994. So that was one of the most documented cases of the last century. So that's an example of reincarnation. And we call this a retribution soulmate, where you reincarnate with the same guy over and over again, or woman, and there are no happy endings to the relationship. They're vicious, negative, nasty, abandonment, murder, you name it, embarrassments. And so that's an example of how you can actually rise above it. Now, when I did the regression and the superconscious mind tap, this woman, I called her Ivy in her current life, not her real name. That was done over 35 years ago. And every year for the next 20 years, she would comment me and send me a message saying, everything is fine. I'm doing fine. I'm in my life doing whatever. So she was, that's a long-term history. So she definitely rose above her environment by accessing her higher self. Because remember, the higher self and the superconscious mind tap is 99% of the therapy. I'm 1%, which is 1/10 of an LA agent. So I don't take too much credit for this. The patients do it themselves by connecting to the higher self, which anyone can be trained to do. And by the way, during my workshop in Laughlin, Nevada on Friday, the 11th of June, between 3 and 4:45 p.m., I will be doing a complete workshop on regression and progression, which will include a group hypnotic regression and progression experience, as well as a superconscious mind tap. So if your viewers or listeners want to have that experience, want to see me in person, go to the workshop. And of course, everything is recorded there. But they want to experience the live regression, progression, and superconscious mind tap, they're welcome to do that. In addition, while I'm in Laughlin, Nevada, on Thursday the 10th through Saturday the 12th, I will be doing live patient experiences. I will be seeing private patients while I'm there for those 2 days or 2.5 days.
Yeah, that's going to be great. You guys will not want to miss that. And it's amazing the benefits of regression. Some people are in disbelief when you tell them the things that it can help you with, like not only physical ailments, mental, physiologically, things that most doctors wouldn't be able to touch. These regressions are helping people more than anything else, right?
Well, it's actually the superconscious mind tap. So let me give you the example of a case that occurred from one of my patients from Italy. She had certain issues I was working with, but one of the big issues she had was she had a fibroid tumor, a very large one in her uterus. So she was seeing an oncologist, and this is a woman who was like 27 years old, right? So the oncologist, being rather narrow-minded and very allopathically oriented, was going to put her on chemotherapy, even though the biopsy showed that the tumor was benign, not cancerous. But she said, we got to get this out of your body. Well, chemotherapy isn't going to do that anyway, you know? But anyway, so I'm working with this woman. She goes, what do I do? And I said, don't go on chemotherapy. That's absurd. I don't understand why she's doing that. Let's use some superconscious mind tap healing and we'll do our thing. So I'm working with her. She's a great patient and she's getting over her depression and some of the other issues we're working with. So one day about maybe 5 weeks into the therapy, she, at the beginning of the session, she goes, doctor, I just want you to know what happened to me last week between our sessions. I said, what's going on? She had an emergency. She was bleeding from the uterus. They put her into the OR, not the OR, but her hospital, gave her a bed in the hospital. The oncologist was called in. And then all of a sudden, it was almost like a pregnancy delivery that she was going through these convulsions. The fibroid tumor got kicked out of her body. So it was almost like delivering a baby, except this was a fibroid tumor. In other words, the tumor is out of her body. So I said, well, that's interesting. Okay, remember now, this is all energy. I'm not putting on any meds. And so I said, so what did the oncologist do? She goes, well, after you rest and heal and stop your bleeding, et cetera, they cauterize the area, then I want you to go on chemotherapy. So my patient said, not in this lifetime, I guess, calling my work here. And that was the end of that. She fired the oncologist, which of course she should have. The oncologist was an idiot. The woman is perfectly healthy and fine, and the tumor is out of her body. And this was the size of a grapefruit. This was a very large tumor. So this is the example of what energy healing can do. In my book, Soul Healing, I have a case of mine that I work with Soul Healing to overcome. And when I say cure, the patient does it, not me. A case of cancer. It was lung cancer and AIDS. And this book was done back in the 90s. So that's if you can cure cancer and AIDS, again, the higher self is doing that. You can deal with anything. Lupus, any of the other autoimmune systems, you name it. So this is an example arthritis, for example, is an autoimmune response. And these kinds of things can be cured literally by energy. So this is psychosomatic medicine at its best.
Now, earlier you said that we could have up to thousands of lifetimes. What would you say to people that say that it's just us just accessing a form of a collective consciousness and remembering other people's lives in a way?
Well, of course, you can always say that. Even if you document it, you could say you're reading the Akashic records. Like in my patient's case, you say, why didn't Ivy just read the Akashic record of Grace Doe's, the late Grace Doe's, and just assume it's her? Here's the difference. Okay. The work of the late Ian Stevenson, he was a professor emeritus, University of Virginia in Charlottesville for about 50 years, a psychiatrist. He wrote a very famous book, many books, but he wrote 20 Cases Suggestive of Reincarnation. He's a very academic person. So this is not the kind of book you want to read before going to bed. Okay. Very academic, very scientific, very boring, actually, unless you have the background. But anyway, one of his later books, he would report that these kids who were like from India and Sri Lanka and all these primitive villages, when they would have a past life, the child now, remember, these are kids between 2 and 5. So it's very, very credible. These kids don't have the vocabulary the adults do. So one kid described about being stabbed in the neck in a past life, and that's how he died. And the kid reincarnated as this little kid in India with a scar on his neck, which is where the knife wound would have been. And there are other examples of scars that people, that these kids report. So here's physical manifestations of the life. And again, it also relates to the life themselves. For example, I was doing a interview with George Nori from Gaia TV, the first interview I did with him, and that time he did it in the studio. And they wanted me to do a live regression on somebody from the studio audience. So this woman, they chose this woman. I don't know who she was. She was from Colorado. She goes into a life where she's an artist during the Renaissance, a painter, and a very, you know, not famous, but very talented. So I said, boy, this is interesting. What do you do now? Because I don't know anything about her. She goes, well, I'm an artist. And I said, have you taken classes and gone through training? She goes, no. I just pick up a paintbrush and an easel and I start painting, and she's very talented. So this is a carryover of her talent from the past lives. Do you think Mozart, who wrote his first opera when he was 6 years old, do you think maybe he had some past lives that were involved in the music, writing operas in the music industry? So people can have current talents that are reflected and a carryover of past lives. So that's why, yes, you might say that's an alternate hypothesis. You can't prove reincarnation. You can only give suggestive evidence. I'm a scientist. I've got 3 degrees in the sciences, and I'm not going to forget my scientific background. But there are just too many examples, and I don't like the word coincidence. It's not in my vocabulary, where people carry over the talents and intimate knowledge from past lives and carrying it into the current. So that tells me, and by the way, reincarnation is older than humankind. I mean, it's been around, even the Neanderthal men, they buried their dead with their with food and weapons for the next life. The Egyptians copied that, of course, but that goes back to Neanderthals. That's 400,000 BC. Some say 500,000 BC. So reincarnation is older than anything you can imagine today.
Now, would it be possible?
A philosophy that's older than any religion and any political or any other philosophy, to me, that passed the test of time, because if it was a scam, somebody would have been killed in some chieftain and that would have been the end of it. No, it's been around forever. So that to me is not proof, but very credible suggestive evidence.
Is it possible that someone has a past life as a different species or even on a different planet as an extraterrestrial? Is this something you've come across?
Okay, well, the extraterrestrial, yes. The other species, not my experience. I've done over 25,000 regressions at least plus progressions. If you deal with the Tibetans, they have a term called transmigration, which says that you begin as a rock, the mineral kingdom, then you evolve into a plant, and then the lower animals, and then human. But once you're human in their paradigm, which, by the way, I don't agree with, because I've never regressed anyone to be a head of lettuce myself, okay? But once you reach the human state, according to the Tibetans, you can't go backwards into a lower animal. So even when you reach the human state by the Tibetans, you're always a human. But I have never regressed anyone to anything else but a human. Some people are more human than others, but they're all human. But yes, you can be an extraterrestrial, a gray or Pleiadian. Of course, they're going to have past lives too. They have souls. So they're going to have past lives too. Although I don't know about the reptilians with having souls. I got a problem with them. They're nasty and they eat their mistakes. So they're cannibalistic. So you don't want to run into one. But basically it's human to human.
That's very interesting. Well, I think now would be a good time to learn about the different dimensions and planes of existence that we can visit.
Okay, so let's talk about out-of-body experiences. Now, when you go out of the body into the fifth dimension, there's a term that I want to give to your audience. They may not have heard this before unless they have followed my interviews. And that term is ultra-terrestrial. Not extraterrestrial, but ultra-terrestrial. That's a fifth dimensional traveler. So when you go out of the body at night, you're an ultra-terrestrial. There's another term that I want to define, and that's called IBE. Some people, when they're using some of my, I have MP3 files and CDs about training people to go out of the body. They can look at those at my website. When they go out of the body, sometimes they're from the physical body, but they're using their fifth dimensional senses. So in other words, their perspective is from the physical body, but they're hearing sound that you and I can't hear unless you're in the fifth dimension. So that's called an IBE, an in-the-body experience, which often precedes a full-blown out-of-body experience. Okay, so the IBE term is a term that I coined about 30 years ago. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the dimensions now. So when I talk about out-of-body experiences, this is my 13-plane paradigm. Now, I realize that those of your audience that may be very literate in the sense that they have read the literature of East India has a 7-plane paradigm. They're welcome to their experience, but I use a little inflation here, minus 13 planes, as well as the Mayans, interestingly enough. So, you know, the Mayans and I are on the same page. I guess it's a Western thing. So I'm going to give you the pattern here of the different dimensions. Now, these dimensions, each of them have a sound that's characteristic of it, as well as physical characteristics, or when I say physical, metaphysical characteristics. So we're on the earth plane. This is the physical plane or the earth plane characterized by the sound of thunder. So if you're going to go out of the body and use any of my CDs or MP3 files or anything else, you don't want to do it during a thunderstorm. Why? Because thunder is the sound of the earth plane. It will keep you on the earth plane and you'll most likely fail in your experience. It's like a salmon swimming upstream. You know, it's a very difficult mentality. So wait till the thunderstorm is over. The physical plane is the plane of the dimension of the five senses, the dimension of illusion of reality, the plane of space, time, matter, and energy. That's what we are here today. Now, beyond the earth plane, now we're into the fifth dimension. So now we're going to talk about the next dimension, which is the astral plane. The word astral means starry. It was named during the Middle Ages in Europe. And this is a very emotional dimension. It's divided into the upper and lower, which I'll discuss in a moment. But first, the sound of the astral plane is the roar of the sea, just like when you go to the beach and put a seashell next to your ear. That's what the astral plane signifies. It's the source of all emotions. It's a very emotional dimension. It's a source of psychic attack, by the way, especially the lower astral plane. And there's also a museum in the upper astral plane, which is a museum of the future. So this is where an Edison, a Tesla, Bill Gates or any of these people would go there for their own inventions. And even I went there to discover my superconscious mind tapping progression techniques. So we have the upper and lower astral plane. So let's differentiate. The lower astral plane is the dimension of psychic attack, and you never want to be there. It's a bad neighborhood, okay? So let me define it. Basically, you're in it looks like a cheesecloth environment. It's very hard to see it. It's like an overcast, like a cloudy day, whereas the upper astral plane is very earth-like, beautiful environment, very pleasant. You get feelings of confusion and bewilderment when you're on the lower astral plane, which, by the way, has permanent residents there that are nasty. Every comic book character, every Marvel Entertainment character, vampires, werewolves, just every gargoyles, every creepy character, even fairies too, by the way, they're lower astral entities. People don't understand that concept, but they are. So every weird character was always on the lower astral, whereas the upper astral has human-like figures. So you have feelings of confusion and bewilderment on the lower astral. The upper astral is feelings of alertness, peace, and happiness. The lower astral plane, as I mentioned, has got this foggy environment, the opposite on the upper astral. You get these bizarre and evil inhabitants or entities on the lower astral, where you get the presence of human inhabitants on the upper astral. The lower astral is noisy and disorganized. The upper astral is quiet and organized, the opposite. There's no possibility of spiritual growth, nor any possibility of any contact with your higher self on the lower astral. You just are in a bad neighborhood and you want to get out of there. On the upper astral, you have unlimited spiritual growth and, of course, contact with your higher self, which is what I use to train people to overcome their problems. So when you're out of the body, before we continue on, just to let you know, suppose you're out of the body and you meet people there. How do you know that they're not physical people or fellow astral voyagers or fifth dimensional entities? If they're physical people, remember, you're out of the body now. If they're physical people, they're preoccupied with the earth plane. They don't notice you, and they will look at you when you speak with him, just like people in Los Angeles. Okay, that's a reference point, okay? If you're dealing with an astral entity, they're not preoccupied. They will look at you, and they will speak with you too. Remember, all communication is telepathic on the fifth dimension. If you meet a human person on the earth plane, they're always affected by gravity. Gravity is irrelevant on the fifth dimension. You can fly, teleport, do whatever you want. The auras that you would see as a physical person would look irregular or discolored. That's the way you would see it. Whereas you would see a clear and regularly shaped aura of a fellow astral voyager on the fifth dimension. And people on the earth plane wear contemporary clothes for the most part, whereas on the astral plane or the fifth dimension, they're going to wear out of place clothing, usually the clothing of their favorite past life is what they usually do. So that's basically the difference between the upper and the lower. Now, going back to the paradigm of the fifth dimension here. So beyond the astral plane is now the causal plane, which is the very small dimension, the smallest of all the dimensions. It's characterized by the tinkling of bells. That's the sound, like you're in a New Age bookstore. Okay, that's the causal plane. And this is where the Akashic records are stored. And as I mentioned, the Akashic records are a fifth dimensional computer chip, basically. It's a memory of all past, present, future environments, and anything you've ever done and ever will do are always recorded on the Akashic records. Some people call the Akashic the astral light, and you can't erase it. You can't white it out. Once you do something, it's always there. Okay. Now, beyond the causal plane is one of my favorite dimensions. It's the mental plane. This is the characterized by the sound of running water. The mental plane is where the origin of the word Om is that people use in meditation. The entities look like little angels. They wear white smocks. They live in like geometrically designed buildings. And one characteristic that is unique to this dimension is the highways or freeways. They make their roads out of the soil as we do here on the earth plane, but the color of their soil is iridescent blue. So if you're driving on a car or you're flying above it, remember you could fly in these dimensions, and you see an iridescent blue road below you, you know you're on the mental plane. The mental plane is the source of moral teachings, of ethics and philosophy. It's the home of the gods of most Orthodox religions. The masters would hang out here, or Moses, or Buddha, or Jesus. They would hang out, Krishna, they would hang out on the mental plane more than any other dimension. Beyond the mental plane is now the last dimension of the karmic cycle, and that is the etheric plane. Now, this is the largest of all the dimensions. The sound is the sound of buzzing of bees. It's not irritating as it might sound. It's a very low-keyed sound. And you can see stars 24 hours a day. And the advantage of going to the etheric plane, which I use therapeutically, is that there are these etheric plane surgeons, I should say, that they look like giant tadpoles. They're really weird-looking entities. But what they do is they work and operate on the etheric plane, a body. Now, let me show you. When you go to the astral plane, the soul occupies the astral body. If you go to the mental plane, you occupy the mental body, right? But when you go to the etheric plane, the soul is occupying the etheric body. Why is that important? Because all these spiritual bodies are a little bit different in form and in dimensions to the physical body, except for the etheric body. It's the mirror image of the physical body. In fact, without the etheric body, you would die automatically, immediately. You never have to worry about that. Nothing ever happens to it. But when you're on the etheric plane, accompanied by your higher self, which takes you there, and again, I train people to go there, now you say, okay, I've got this medical problem. Your etheric body is going to have the same problem. The etheric plane surgeons put you into an etheric plane OR, which is really weird, and they use lights and colors and sounds and all kinds of creepy things. But then they operate on the etheric body. And if they cure the etheric body, now this is not a high percentage, but when it works, it's brilliant. When you come back to the physical plane, you can transfer the healing from the etheric body to the physical. And that's how you can cure cancer, AIDS, lupus, and all kinds of incurable diseases. And that's how it works. So that's called etheric plane surgery. I document that in detail in my Astral Voyages book. And it's a very, very, it's an ancient technique, by the way. The mystery schools of ancient Egypt, Persia, Rome, China, they use techniques like this. So this is an old technique. It's been around for thousands of years. Now, that's the karmic cycle, the etheric plane all the way down to the physical. Beyond the sixth plane now in my 13-plane dimension is called the soul plane, which is characterized by the sound of the single note of a flute. This is where the soul goes after any kind of death or crossing into spirit on any of the lower five planes that you may have had a life on. You go there, and then you now are going to be accompanied by your higher self, and this is where you will select your next life. Or if you've perfected the soul in the ascension mechanism, you will ascend into the higher planes to rejoin the God energy complex. The entities that are here to help you make this choice, although you do make the choice, obviously it's your higher self, spirit guides, but then the soul plane entities there, they look like giant floating heads. They look a little weird, but they will be your advisors, along with your higher self and spirit guides. So that's the soul plane. The soul plane is like a DMZ. It's not part of the karmic cycle, and it's not part of the higher planes. You do have a spiritual body. Now, let's say you perfect the soul, okay? So now you're going to go into the higher planes, which means you shed any spiritual body. There is no body on the higher planes. You're now pure energy. And now you're perfect as a soul. Well, your energy, there's no body, you're just a soul, which is pure energy now. So this is called the seventh plane. Then there's the eighth, ninth, 10th, 11th, and 12th, characterized by indescribable orchestra music. There are no things to do there. There's no karmic cycle. There's no time. So obviously no time concept. There's no victims, no perpetrators. It's heaven, basically, nirvana or heaven. And the ultimate, the highest of all the higher planes is the 13th plane, which is the God or nameless plane. And the purpose of this for you eventually is to rejoin the God energy complex and merge with the God energy complex and be one with God. That's what atonement means, at one with God. So that's the 13th plane paradigm that I have. Now, interesting enough, the East Indians, who again, I told you, they have a seventh plane paradigm, but they also use terms like the mental causal and etheric plane. So their terms are very similar. They just have less dimensions. So when people say, how do I know which one is relevant? Well, when you cross into spirit and clinically die, you're going to find out. Once you access your higher self, you're going to find out which one is relevant. So don't worry about the numbers, but you want to always connect with the higher self. Now, what kind of entities, you might say, might you meet when you're in the fifth dimension? By the way, physicists will call the fifth dimension the zero-point field. So if you ever see that term, that's what they mean when they say zero-point field is the fifth dimension. You can meet departed souls, people who have died, crossed into spirit, that are in between the reincarnation cycle. I use this technique to have people overcome bereavement if they've lost a loved one, and that includes a pet, by the way, and they are experiencing bereavement. That's because the soul in the lower astral plane, which is where they will go initially, is going to pull on them and say, oh, I miss you. I can't. This is a terrible dimension. Please help me. And that pull on you is actually bereavement, which is depression to people on the earth plane. You can use a technique I call conscious dying and direct the departed soul into the upper astral plane, not the lower. And when you do that, all bereavement on the earth plane ends. Okay, and I have many cases of that I describe in my book, Exploring the Fifth Dimension, which talks about out-of-body experiences along with teleportation and parallel universes, gives examples of that.
Now, when
people are experiencing near-death experiences, which is a form of out-of-body experience where they're going to die for 2 or 3 or 4 minutes, but they're going to come back. But you can see them and experience them on the astral plane or any part of the fifth dimension. They're usually on the astral plane. And most near-death experiences are on the upper astral, not the lower astral, by the way. You can meet spirit guides there. They hang out there, of course. Angels, that's rare, but you can sometimes run into an angel. They're messages of God, by the way. Angels have never been human. They come directly from the God energy complex, whereas a spirit guide is someone who was human, and now they're in between their lives, or they no longer have to reincarnate, and they're more spiritually evolved in us than they can help us. But they originally were human and had a karmic cycle. Okay, they just graduated, as we say. You can meet your higher self there, which is always ideal. You can meet extraterrestrials, the good ones, if you're on the upper astral, like Pleiadians or Sirians. They're really cool. And another type of person you can meet, it's a real person, is a time traveler from our future. I call them chrononauts. They will hang out in the fifth dimension because once they're there, the men in black, and there are men in black, they can't identify them because a man in black will kill a time traveler from our future if they see them. They don't like them at all. Men in black are nice people. So what are the advantages of going out of the body? Well, obviously one is eliminating the fear of death, because when you clinically die, cross into spirit, you go into the fifth dimension. First, the lower astral plane normally, because we die in fear because of religion and governments and bad movies. And then you eventually, if you do this right, you go into the upper astral, meet your higher self, and then the higher self takes you to the soul plane. So you can see the mechanism of not just reincarnation, but of ascension. And that really will eliminate the fear of death, because there's no such thing as death. Yeah, the physical body dies, but the physical body isn't you. The soul is you. And the soul is energy, and that's what reincarnates. The physical body will eventually fertilize your lawn, okay? But the soul is eternal. Even the law of the physics, the law of the conservation of matter and energy, clearly states that once you create energy, you can't destroy it. You can change its form. Heat can become light, electricity, radiation, but you don't lose any of the photons or the numbers of elements that make up the energy of the soul. You can contact lost loved ones. I mentioned about overcoming bereavement, spirit guides, angels, your higher self, time travel, smart future. You can do a form of astral negotiation where you can, let's say you're having a problem with somebody on the earth plane. It may be a husband or a wife or an employer, employee, or a next door neighbor. Somebody's causing you problems and they're not being very open-minded. You can't deal with them. In other words, you're always going to be a creep or creepette. Well, when you go out of the body in the REM cycle, you can summon their soul, occupying a spiritual body, to come to what I call a sanctuary, like a fifth dimensional conference room. They have to show up, by the way, but they don't have to stay. But if they stay, they're going to be accompanied by their higher self. You're going to have your higher self. They're much more open to negotiation. So you can work out a lot of problems with people that you would never be able to do on the earth plane. And I've used this myself with patients as well as my own personal life to do this. So you can do this. And that's called astral negotiation. Again, it's a very ancient technique. I mentioned etheric plane surgery for healing on the etheric plane. You can improve your creativity. You can perceive the future. Now, I'm going to give you an example of how that can be pretty heavy in a moment. You can facilitate your own ascension. You can meet time travelers and ETs, the Pleiadians and Syrians, which are the real positive ones. You can teleport. You can travel to parallel universes. You can, again, read the Akashic records. So let me give you an example of a woman I worked with way back in 1996. I call her Tammy, not her real name. She was a college student who just graduated from school in New York City, and she was going to go to Europe the last half of the summer with her friends and then go to graduate school. You know, that's a pretty common MO. So she comes to me and she wants to, she saw my Search for Grace movie, and she said, I'd like you to train me to go out of the body. And I said, fine. Now, I told her that when you go out of the body, you're going to go into the space-time continuum and you're going to see into the future. She goes, great, that's even better. So while she's in town for 5 days, she's a great patient. She goes out of the body and does her thing, and she sees events that are going to occur during the time she's in Los Angeles. And she had 4 or 5 events that she reported that occurred precisely, things that she couldn't possibly predict, okay? Dealt with other people she met and all kinds of other things. So she's got a good track record. So now Tammy is done. She goes back to New York, and she now, remember, she's going to leave in July, in mid-July, to go to Paris. Well, she calls me at the end of June and she goes, Doctor, this is Tammy. I have an emergency. And I said, Tammy, look, I retired from dentistry many years ago to get away from emergency. What's going on? And she said, well, I did use your CD at the time, and I want to see how my trip is going to go. So I did your CD and I wanted to see what my trip to Paris was like. I said, okay, so what happened? She goes, well, this plane takes off, goes right up from JFK. The plane goes up in the air, immediately crashes, everybody dies, including me. And that's the end of the story. And she goes, what do I do? And I said, look, Tammy, I don't want to run your life. I believe in psychic empowerment. Why don't you just change your flight plans and call me at the end of the summer? She goes, oh, that's a good idea. Brilliant, right? Okay. So the next thing I know, the end of the summer, is the end of August. Tammy calls me. All right, from New York. She's about to start graduate school. And she goes, I said, hey, Tammy, what's up? She says, well, I want you to know that she was originally going to go on TWA flight 800. On July 17th, 1996, that plane left JFK, 230 people were aboard, immediately crashed into the Long Island Sound, and all 230 passengers and all crew died. She would have been 231. Now, I didn't save her life. She said, "Doctor, you saved my life." No, I didn't do that. It was her higher self. But that's an example how it's real. How could she possibly know that? She had a precognitive experience. It actually came true, and thank goodness she was not meant to die, which is why she saw me in the first place, I'm sure. And so that's an example of how out-of-body experiences can be very heavy. So one aspect which is different than out-of-body experiences is teleportation. So let me, now teleportation is very simply, you physically move from one place to another without any craft or any other thing. You just simply like, snap your fingers and you move miles away, hundreds of miles, thousands of miles away instantly. That's what teleportation is. And I'm going to give you a case of teleportation. Now, by the way, I've done this myself. It's not an easy technique. It's the most difficult thing in the world to do. But I've worked with several patients over the years that have done teleportation or trained them to do this. So here's a case. First of all, let me tell you what it feels like. This is a couple of sentences I want to read of one of my patients who had this experience and decided to write it to me to tell me what he experienced. And this is, and I've done this myself, and this is accurate. So this is his experience. And I'm quoting now. "It felt almost like I was caught in a giant web. Suddenly, the world exploded into countless billions of glowing threads. They stretched away in all directions, and they intersected everything, including me. The overall effect was very similar to looking into a hologram, except it was visceral as well as visual. You could see slash feel the image." That is teleportation. So I was working with this woman. I'll call her Vivian. This is a pretty heavy case. Vivian was, she's a millennial in her late 20s, and she was dating a guy who was physically abusive. He would beat her up. He would, you know, really just a real creep. And she couldn't break up the relationship. She was very insecure, and she was not that physically attractive, so she felt she couldn't date anyone else, you know, that kind of thing. So one day, they're driving on the freeway, and this is in Los Angeles, and her idiot boyfriend is punching her and just, you know, just yelling and screaming at her. And they're driving like 80 miles an hour. He opens up, he kicks open the passenger door and throws her out of the car, traveling 80 miles an hour in the freeway. Now, Vivian twists her ankle, okay? So she can't walk very well. And there's a car coming right at the opposite direction. It's about to hit her. So she sees this. She doesn't know what to do because her boyfriend is not relevant here. He's gone. He's just whatever. So she remembers the techniques that I was working with her to train to do teleportation. She remembered my post-hypnotic suggestion for her to teleport. And the next thing she knows, she's sitting on her couch in her living room in her apartment with a twisted ankle. Now, what happened was that the car that was about to hit her went through her. In other words, it passed right through her and didn't hit her because she teleported. The guy stopped and he didn't know what's going on. They pulled over to the shoulder. Her boyfriend also didn't know what's going on. And the next thing he knows, later on, he calls her and says, "What's going on?" She goes, "I'm here in my living room." By the way, she eventually broke up with this idiot, and her life was saved by doing teleportation. So that's an example of what I call the T word for teleportation. So wow. That's an example. Now, here's one more case before you can go into it. I do want to discuss quickly parallel universes.
Sure.
A man by the name of... trying to think of his name, Charles W. Ingersoll from Cloquet, Minnesota. Back in 1948, ran a radio station, and he was very busy, but he wanted to go to the Grand Canyon, but he was too busy, he couldn't go. So he said, "Oh, okay, you know, no problem." So 7 years later, in 1955, he goes to his local photography store and he buys a 1955 brand new camera. It was a slide camera to take pictures. And now he was able to go to the Grand Canyon with his family, right? So he buys this camera. Remember, it's a 1955 brand new camera. Goes to the Grand Canyon, leans over the edge, takes pictures, you know, and all this kind of stuff. All right, so now he goes back home to Minnesota. And he goes into his photography store to get the film developed and everything. And when he goes there, he noticed that in those days, they had these films, these like 8 millimeter films made by a company called Castle Films. I'm very familiar with that company. And he saw a film about the Grand Canyon. So he says, hey, I'm going to get that thing. I'm going to, you know, get that film and let me see their version of the Grand Canyon versus what I was. Well, when he plays the film on his little projector at home, remember, this is 1955, he sees himself with his 1955 camera leaning over the edge of the Grand Canyon. That film was copyrighted in 1948, the year he was going to go to the Grand Canyon. So what do we learn from that? They don't fake copyright dates, okay? That was a film that was made in 1948. And the photography guy who ran the store said, yes, he's had that film there for years. But he's in the film.
Wow.
And so what he did was he actually teleported, because he was thinking about it. He teleported with his camera to the Grand Canyon to be filmed. So there's an example of teleportation and time travel. So that's what I wanted to share.
Yeah.
Now, to go into parallel universes, we live in a multi-universe dimension, multi-dimensional universe. You can, so there are me's and you's in other universes. You only have one higher self, but you have one, you have many subsets of your soul that exist in all these bodies. They're physical bodies. But when you perceive a parallel universe, you technically are in the fifth dimension. So that is an example of the fifth dimension.
Well, so, yeah, Dr. Bruce, I wanted to ask you about, I know we got a few minutes left. I wanted to see if you could tell us about your experience. I know you had a timeline shift where you actually shifted to a different reality, right?
So this goes back to the Search for Grace movie. Back in 1994, it was January, very early, and the writer of the teleplay, which is the script for the movie, the network, because there were a lot of political problems and all kinds of problems with people, the producers and stuff, they were not going to do the movie. They were not going to air the movie. And this is a guy who I've known for several years. He's one of these guys who, you know, no matter how much money he makes, he's always in debt. So he needed the film to air, and I wanted to air too. So he says, Bruce, it's not going to air. What are we going to do? And I said, don't worry, I'm going to use one of my weird techniques and fix this. He goes, whatever. So I went into the hypnotic level, did my new you technique, as I call that. And that means I'm laying out the parallel universes. And I see the one that I was on in 1994, the movie would never air. Now my life was actually very good, but you know, no problem. But the one that, at least several of them, but one that it aired, which I felt was my best frequency, we call that a frequency, a parallel universe, I switched tracks. And on May 17th, 1927, The Search for Grace aired in this universe on CBS. Now, it wasn't just the movie airing. Over the next 25 years or more, I saw myself doing all kinds of things that I had no control over. For example, in those days, I used to do interviews with Art Bell, the late Art Bell, who set up the Coast to Coast Network. So I'm going myself into the future, and now it's the year 2003, you know, and beyond, and I see myself being interviewed, not by Art Bell, but by a guy who I humorously describe as the Greek fisherman look, and that would be George Norrie. And I tell him that and he laughs because he looks like a Greek fisherman. I didn't know who he was. I didn't know his reputation. No, I never followed him because I don't know radio hosts unless I interview with them, you know, for the most part. So all of a sudden I'm saying, well, that's weird, but okay, no Art Bell. And who's this guy? Well, in 2003, the network hooked me up with George Norrie. And for the last 18 years, he's been my best friend in the media. So many things have occurred. So yes, I switched tracks and I can train anyone to do the same thing. And that's called the new you technique. And if they go to my homepage, there's a CD, a program called the Custom Design Your Own Destiny, which teaches them how to do that. And I also have an astral voyaging program for out-of-body experience and a hypnotic time travel, which takes you into past and future lives and super conscious mind taps.
That's very cool. Now, I want to touch on one more thing before I let you go tonight. You were talking about the mental plane and how you can find ascended masters there, basically. And we're actually able to communicate with them if we can actually make it to that plane. We can communicate with, say, Buddha or Jesus or whoever's hanging out there.
Now, there's two ways of doing that. One way, the easiest way, is to go to the mental plane. Now, the masters won't always communicate with you because they have other things to do. But if it's relevant and if you're respectful and cool, yes, they can communicate with you. Now, there's another way. How do we get information about the higher planes? How do I know about the indescribable orchestra music and all these different dimensions that are above it? Nobody's there, right? You can't be, excuse me, you can't be there if you have a karmic cycle. Well, what you can do is when you're on the soul plane, you can eavesdrop literally, with the help of your higher self and these floating heads that are the entities of the soul plane, you can eavesdrop and get information from masters, ascended masters, because remember, they're ascended masters, and they can give you information about the higher planes, and that's how we know about it. So yes, there's an old expression, when the student is ready, the teacher will be there. If you're supposed to know something, your masters, ascended masters, and just other masters will give it to you. If you're not supposed to know, they won't give it to you. They don't violate the prime directive, so to speak.
I see. Yeah, that is super interesting. And one more thing. With near-death experiences, for people that report having negative experiences with near-death, are they visiting some of these lower planes? And is there a way of being trapped in these lower planes?
All right. Well, you can't be trapped. You can always, as soon as you wake up, if you're doing an experience, or as soon as you're revived by the physician, in the OR, you're going to come back to the earth plane. Only 5%, if you deal with the research of Kenneth Ring, Michael Sabam, and others, only 5% of near-death experiences are negative. 95% are positive, which means 95% take place on the upper astral plane, and the 5% that are negative are lower astral plane, but you immediately go back to the earth plane when you're revived. So no one's ever gets stuck on the dimensions. In fact, my patients are frustrated because they want to spend more time on the astral plane or in the fifth dimension, and all of a sudden they zip back into their physical body, and they want to hang out there a lot longer. They usually can't stay out very long, even though they would like to. So the default position is going back to your physical body.
And you also said there's no danger in any of these planes. There's no way of being harmed.
I've been out of the body over 3,000 times in my life, and I'm still on the earth plane. I'm not talking to you from the astral plane.
So right.
No problemo, as Homer Simpson or Bart Simpson would say, okay?
That's great. Well, Dr. Bruce, thank you so much again for joining us tonight. If people want to find out more about you, get some of your books, check out your appearance in Laughlin, give us your website and any social media stuff like that.
Okay, so Dr., small d, small r, brucegoldberg.com. So it's drbrucegoldberg.com is my website. All my social networking is on there. You can access my YouTube link on my homepage, which has 55 different videos of interviews, television, and some radio and workshops on there. You can see exactly what I'm doing. Also a Twitter page, you can get all that there. If they want to call me, they can do my toll-free number, which is 1-800-KARMA-4U, which is 1-800-KARMA, the number for the letter U, 1-800-527-6248, and that will hook them up with my toll-free number. That's basically for making orders. If you want to speak with me personally, I'd rather you email me from my homepage, give me your cell number, and then we can communicate. If you want to schedule appointments, then we can do it that way.
That's great. Dr. Bruce, thank you so much again for coming out, coming on tonight. I can't wait to meet you in Laughlin, hear your fantastic presentations, and possibly take part in regression. That would be great.
Well, my presentation, and you will have experience of hypnosis, and you can experience your own past and future lives and your superconscious mind.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Bruce. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening.